Hi, David Emery here. Side one of For the Record program number 757, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part four, Dramatis Personae, part four, subtitled The Gruppen Hobbit and the Underground Reich. This program is being recorded on October 6th of the year 2013. Again, the people have just tuned in. I was off the air for quite some time. I had major oral surgery, and I'm still awaiting partial dentures, which will correct the Elmer Fudd vocal inflection. Now, we are going to be plunging right back in where we left off last week. We're doing an analysis of the, quote, disclosures, unquote. Note the quotes. Of the person I call Eddie the Friendly Spook. That's Edward Snowden, the former NSA and CIA operative who undertook to leak a bunch of documents and has garnered a great deal of media attention and primarily accolades, although in some quarters he has been condemned. The analysis that we are presenting here is complex and multi-layered, and as I've said before, for that reason, I'm starting out with analysis of the elements involved in this drama, the dramatis personae, the people involved in this play. And as we have seen, and as we're going to see again, they tend to be not only individuals who track back to the far right, but individuals with strong links to what I call the Underground Reich. I am going to be citing some books for people to use and articles from the SpitfireList.com website. If you're new to the program, if the concept of an Underground Reich sounds insane, and I could appreciate that might be the case, there is documentation for that. Please use the SpitfireList.com website. Those of you who do not are, I think, going to be at an increasing disadvantage with regard to trying to get located in the material that I am speaking about in these programs. Now, in our last program, we were taking a look at what I call the Palestinian Libertarian Organization. Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden not only donated money to Ron Paul's campaign, he is an exponent of the political, economic, and social theories embraced by Ron Paul, his son Senator Rand Paul, and which derive from the Ludwig von Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama. That institution is explicitly anti-democratic, is inextricably linked with the neo-Confederate movement, not only justifies African-American slavery, one of their resident scholars and the top Ron Paul aide, a guy named Walter Block, has advanced a theory he calls voluntary slavery, sort of the ultimate oxymoron. I guess you could say that voluntary slavery might be said to constitute the ultimate collateralized debt obligation, using a contemporary phrase. Time permitting, we're going to touch back on the Ludwig von Mises Institute because one of the top students of a guy named Jürgen Habermas, an individual who is not only one of the 20th century's most famous philosophers, but an individual who ostensibly at least tracks back to relatively democratically oriented institutions, although I think there are some very serious questions about Jürgen Habermas. One of his students, a guy named Hans Hermann Hoppe, is an unabashed advocate of absolute monarchy and also very tightly wound up with the Ludwig von Mises Institute, in addition to the fact that Eddie Snowden himself is a Palestinian, so to speak. Ron Paul's top legal advisor for his 2012 campaign is the lawyer for Eddie Snowden and his father, Lon Snowden. That's L-O-N. Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks being inextricably linked with the Snowden operation, is also a big admirer of Ron and Rand Paul. He, too, is a, quote, Palestinian, unquote. Last week, we took a look at Ron Paul's political outlook and his history. He's a wonderful seducer. He tells people what they like to hear, but in fact, his politics are as reactionary as you can get. He is inextricably linked with people like David Duke. The Stormfront Network has been for decades. The Liberty Lobby, the League of the South, other neo-Confederates. And it would be impossible, I think, to exaggerate just how fascistic and how racist Ron Paul really is. And this is nothing new. What we are going to be looking at in this program is a company called Palantir. That is a cutting-edge Silicon Valley firm. And we are going to be taking a look at Palantir, which appears to be, its disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding, it appears to be the company that developed the Prism software, which is at the focal point of the Snowden, quote, disclosures, unquote. Now, the point of transition from discussion of the Palestinian Libertarian Organization, and again, Ron Paul and Rand Paul have been walking point in their criticisms of the NSA and support for Eddie Snowden and Julian Assange. The point of entry to our discussion of Palantir from our discussion of Ron Paul comes from the old principle dating back to the Watergate scandal, follow the money. In terms of understanding things in the political realm, following the money, paying attention to who pays the bills, who handles the invoices, that is always a dominant consideration. For example, with regard to WikiLeaks, its anarcho-utopian followers notwithstanding, when you begin to examine WikiLeaks, where does it wind up? It winds up at the PRQ servers in Sweden, and those were underwritten by Carl Lundstrom, one of Sweden's top fascists, and an individual who arranged a Scandinavian speaking tour for David Duke. David Duke himself joined at the hip with Ron Paul. The aforementioned Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, I have a lot of nicknames for him, the Peach Fuzz Fascist Babyface Snowden, naming him after the famous 1930s criminal, Babyface Nelson. He contributed money to Ron Paul's campaign in 2012, and his views such as Snowden's, that is, his views such as the necessity for eliminating Social Security, the necessity of going back to the gold standard. These are vintage Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Ludwig von Mises Institute ideas. Snowden is basically an exponent of the political, economic, and social theories of the 1%. Now, he gave money to Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, but most of the money that capitalized Ron Paul's super PAC came from a fellow we looked at great length in For the Record 718 called In Your Facebook, a Virtual Panopticon, question mark. In that program, done on Independence Day of 2010, I asked the question about whether so many of these technologies, smartphones and various apps that enable them to hook up with the internet, social media in particular, noting the profound links not only between the intelligence community and these technologies, which in and of itself I find unremarkable and unsinister, it is to be expected that professional intelligence services are going to be deeply involved with any cutting-edge technological and communications development. In fact, so much of this stuff actually has its origins with the military and the intelligence community. It turns out, however, that Peter Thiel, an individual who is about as far to the right as Ron Paul, an individual who appears to be underground Reich. He is of German extraction. His father was a chemical engineer from Frankfurt. That is the old headquarters of IG Farben. Peter Thiel got his start in business when his father gave him $1 million with which to jumpstart his career. Peter Thiel has been very successful as an investor, one of the top investors behind PayPal, behind Facebook, and he also is the largest individual stockholder in Palantir, about which we are going to be speaking at great length. He also is the primary investor in a company called Robotix, R-O-B-O-T-X, that develops security robots, and the CEO of Robotix, again, developing security robots, is a fellow named Alex Karp, last name K-A-R-P. Alex Karp is the CEO of Palantir, and he is the fellow whom I call the Gruppenhobbit, or whom I have nicknamed the Gruppenhobbit. The name Palantir, the name of this company, comes from the Palantiri, the seeing stones of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. Palantir employees call their headquarters the Shire. That comes from the area in Middle-earth where the hobbits hail from, and hence my nickname for Alex Karp, the Gruppenhobbit. The main funder of Ron Paul's Super PAC is also the largest stockholder in Palantir, which also got startup money from the intelligence community. And Peter Thiel is also the largest investor in Robotix, which makes security robots, and which is also headed up by the Gruppenhobbit, Alex Karp. About Peter Thiel and his funding of Ron Paul, this is from CNN's Money Program, and this is from February 20th of 2012 by Charles Riley. It's headlined, PayPal co-founder donates millions to Ron Paul Super PAC. It reads in part, Silicon Valley Renaissance man Peter Thiel donated another $1.7 million in January to a super PAC that backs Ron Paul, according to disclosure documents filed Monday. I would note that Ron Paul's super PAC, Ron Paul was a former congressman from Texas. His super PAC is located in, of all places, Provo, Utah. And most of the money for that super PAC comes from Peter Thiel, about whom we're going to have more to say presently. One thing in passing, and I will have some links and text excerpts. Ron Paul was no independent Republican. He is, in fact, as one might well infer from the fact that his super PAC was in Provo, Utah, outside of Salt Lake City, a major area of strength for the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. In fact, Ron Paul and Mitt Romney are also very, very close. Any divisions are for cosmetic purposes only and are strictly rhetorical. Of Peter Thiel, now again, Peter Thiel is the number one financier of Ron Paul's Super PAC. Peter Thiel is the number one investor in Palantir that makes the Prism software. And Peter Thiel is also the number one investor in Robotix that manufactures security robots, and it is also headed up by Alex Karp. By the way, the general counsel for Palantir has denied, or Palantir denies, that their prison is the prison that is being used, that was the focal point of the Snowden disclosures. As we will see, there is a great deal of information that, in fact, Palantir is deeply involved with NSA, and their company is inextricably linked not only with NSA, but with the intelligence community in general. The notion that NSA and other intelligence services are using, that they're using a counter-terror software program with the same name as another counter-terror software program. Simply, as they say, that dog won't hunt. How many Microsoft Words can you think of? How many Corvette Stingrays can you think of? The big tech firms are nothing if not litigious, and that is to be borne in mind here. Now, of Peter Thiel, we took a look in our last program at Ludwig von Mises Institute, and they are explicitly critical of democracy for the same reasons that Hitler rejected it in his speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf in 1933. It was that speech which won the industrialists and financiers of Germany over to the Nazi Party, as opposed to one of the other right-wing or fascist parties in Germany. To get an idea of Peter Thiel, and again, to get more complete background, for the record, 718 in your Facebook, a virtual panopticon, has a great deal of information about Peter Thiel that will be linked to this program. In the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence report for the summer of 2012, there's an article by Leah Nelson called PayPal Founder Peter Thiel Continues to Tout Anti-Government Manifesto. And in a paper that was published with the Cato Institute, Peter Thiel said, wrote the following: "I no longer believe that freedom and democracy are compatible," unquote. Thiel wrote in the 2009 manifesto published by the libertarian Cato Institute, again quoting, "Since 1920, the vast increase in welfare beneficiaries and the extension of the franchise to women," skipping down, "have rendered the notion of capitalist democracy into an oxymoron." Basically, this is the viewpoint that was expressed, articulated in Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf. It is the doctrine that is espoused by the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And that same point of view, the notion that democracy and capitalism or free enterprise are mutually exclusive, is the doctrine that is espoused by Peter Thiel. Now, another point, just as we should keep in mind Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf, bear in mind something else that Hitler wrote in Mein Kampf, and this will be true and applicable throughout the course of our analysis. Hitler wrote in Mein Kampf that, quote, "People tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept a thing as true." In our examination of Palantir, or the Gruppenhobbit, as I call Alex Karp, an individual with long-standing progressive credentials, and yet an individual who is engaged in things that really are, shall we say, divergent from what we are told he believes in. Remember what Hitler wrote in Mein Kampf: "They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts." Now, again, Although Palantir denies that their prison is the same prison software used that is the focal point of the NSA disclosures, I just don't think that can be viewed as credible. If there were more than one counterterror software, software that was developed, they wouldn't have the same name. There would have been massive, litigation that would have been involved in such a thing. Josh Marshall, in his Talking Points memo of June 7th, 2013, has the following, skipping down. PRISM is the government's name for a program that uses technology from Palantir. Palantir is a Silicon Valley startup that's now valued at well over $1 billion that focuses on data analysis for the government. And it goes on to present their discussion. And again, the point being here is that the evidence suggests very strongly that the PRISM that was developed and is marketed by Palantir, a remarkable software program with, as we will see, numerous and growing number of corporate clients in addition to the many clients they have in the military and the intelligence community, the notion that there is more than one PRISM software simply defies belief. There would have been major copyright infringement or patent infringement or both. For example, and there I will link many other articles talking about PRISM and Palantir. An article by James Risen and Eric Lichtblau from the New York Times of June 8th of 2013, how the U.S. uses technology to mine more data more quickly. And this guy says, when American analysts hunting terrorists sought new ways to comb through the troves of phone records, emails, and other data piling up as digital communications exploded over the past decade, they turned to Silicon Valley computer experts who had developed complex equations to thwart Russian mobsters intent on credit card fraud. The partnership between the intelligence community and Palantir Technologies, a Palo Alto, California company founded by a group of inventors from PayPal, is just one of many that the National Security Agency and other agencies have forged as they have rushed to unlock the secrets of big data. Again, the notion that NSA is using more than one counterterror software named PRISM just is not a credible scenario. We are going to be using an article from the September 2nd, 2013 issue of Forbes magazine. It's called How a Deviant, Unquote, Philosopher Built Palantir, a CIA-funded data mining juggernaut. This by Andy Greenberg and Ryan Mack, and it talks about the origins of Palantir, which again was quite obviously the focal point of the discussion in that James Rise and Eric Lichtblau New York Times article that I just excerpted. Now again, the CEO of Palantir is a guy named Alex Karp with long-standing progressive credentials. I call him the Grubenhobbit. He closes this Forbes article by reiterating his own desire for privacy. Karp, a social theory PhD, doesn't dodge these concerns. Skipping down, I didn't sign up for the government to know when I smoke a joint or have an affair. He acknowledges this in response to criticism by many people that Palantir had made a, quote, Big Brother, unquote, scenario altogether plausible. Again, I think we can safely conclude that Palantir's PRISM is the PRISM. It does not surprise me that they would officially discount that because the publicity that has been generated in connection with Edward Snowden is very, very bad indeed. And as we will see in our examination of Palantir, it has a great many corporate clients as well as its intelligence community clients. Excerpting from this 9/2/2013 Forbes magazine article, among those using Palantir to connect the dots are the Marines who deployed its tools in Afghanistan for forensic analysis of roadside bombs and predicting insurgent attacks. Skipping down, in the book The Finish, detailing the killing of Osama bin Laden, author Mark Bowden writes that Palantir's software actually deserves the popular designation killer app, unquote. And now, Palantir is emerging from the shadow world of spies and special ops to take corporate America by storm. The same tools that can predict ambushes in Iraq are helping pharmaceutical firms analyze drug data. According to a former J.P. Morgan Chase staffer, they have saved the firm hundreds of millions of dollars by addressing issues from cyber fraud to distressed mortgages. A Palantir user at the bank can, in seconds, see connections between a Nigerian internet protocol address, a proxy server somewhere within the U.S., and payments flowing out from a hijacked home equity line of credit, just as military customers piece together fingerprints on artillery shell fragments, location data, anonymous tips, and social media to track down Afghani bomb makers. These tools have allowed Palantir's T-shirted 20-somethings to woo customers away from the suits and ties of IBM, Booz Allen, and Lockheed Martin with a product that deploys faster, offers cleaner results, and often costs less than $1 million per installation, a fraction of the price its rivals can offer. Its commercial clients, whose identities it guards even more closely than those of its government customers, include Bank of America and News Corp. And again, there are many other articles talking about NSA and Palantir. One of the paragraphs from this story: Palantir lives the realities of its customers, the NSA, the FBI, and the CIA, an early investor in Palantir through its InQtel venture fund. By the way, I would note that the current head of the FBI, Mr. Comer, is a former general counsel for Palantir. What we're going to be doing through the bulk of this program is taking a look at Palantir, the individuals involved in it, and we are going to be asking the musical question, might Palantir actually be an underground Reich operation, perhaps without the conscious knowledge of the Gruppenhobbit, Alex Karp? I don't know. I don't concern myself with what goes on between people's ears in the age of mind control. That's impossible to tell. Perhaps he's a mind control job. Perhaps his mentor, German philosopher Jürgen Habermas, is a mind control job. Or perhaps Alex Karp is just an opportunist of sorts, and his lefty hippy-dippy Tolkien-esque persona is something that adapts very readily to the uses of somebody like Peter Thiel, who does not believe in democracy in considerable measure because we made what he sees as the mistake of allowing women to vote. However, we're going to examine that in side two of this program. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 757, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part four, Dramatis Personae, part four, subtitle The Gruppenhobbit and the Underground Reich. This has been recorded on October 6th of 2013. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.